Welcome to the Finding Mastery podcast. I am Michael Gervais, and I am so excited to be able to begin this process. And basically, the attempt that we're going to do here is sit down with world-leading performers or people that are hungry for mastery in their life and really understand how they work. And it's an opportunity to listen and learn what is their unique journey? Like, what is the unique path that brought them to now? What is the framework, their mental framework that it's allowed them to understand how the world works and understand how they fit in the world? And then the third element is, what is the particular mental skills or the mindset that they've cultivated and developed to be able to be or hungry to be one of the best in the world?
Finding Mastery is brought to you by listening. This is exactly what their app does. It helps you listen to books and content that you might not be able to sit down and actually have the time to read. There was a time early in my career where I remember sitting in the back hallways of my university and being in the library for hours, reading all of the sports psychology literature and research that I could get my hands on. I loved it. I cherished it. The field of sports psychology is just absolutely on a bender right now. It is growing so fast. It is nearly impossible to keep up with all of the research that's coming out. So that's why I love what listening is doing. It's a game changer for me. So the listening app, it lets me listen to anything that's in writing while I'm on the go. Everything from academic papers to books, PDFs, web pages, articles, anything that I put in their app, it reads it to me. It narrates to me. And plus their AI is great. The way that the interface sounds, like, of course, it's not a human that's reading, but it kind of, the AI is so good of what they're doing, it just works. And then there's also this note-taking function. They know that people like us like to take notes. And so it's as simple as when I hear a key idea, I instantly press a button and that section is saved. They've done a really nice job with this product and they've got a great offer for us. Usually they only give a 2-week trial, but because you are listening to Finding Mastery, you get a whole month for free. Check that out, a whole month for free. So I want to encourage you to go check it out. listening.com/findingmastery or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get started. Again, it's listening.com/findingmastery or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get 1 month completely free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hims. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing simple, convenient, and affordable access to science-informed treatments for erectile dysfunction, known as ED. They also are servicing hair loss, weight loss, and more. Health struggles like ED, they're common, but they can be hard to talk about when it comes to finding a solution. That's why Hims has been a game changer for so many men. The entire process is 100% online. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in a discreet package. No waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, and no insurance is needed. Plus, you can manage your plan directly on the Hims app. You can track progress and learn more about your conditions and how to treat them from leading medical experts. If you or a loved one has been struggling with ED, I really want to encourage you to go check out Hims. I know ED often has a psychological component to it as well. So be sure that you're stacking some psychological best practices into your daily routine. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/findingmastery. That's Hims, HIMS.com/findingmastery for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/findingmastery. Disclaimer, hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
And in this next conversation, I'm just honored to be able to learn from this athlete, now coach. And it's just an amazing experience to be able to sit in front of folks and have them share their dialogue about how they work and how they're understanding progression. And in this conversation, it was with the legendary coach, Karai. And he's most notably known as one of the best male volleyball players to ever play the game. Matter of fact, there's some stats in here that he'll reference, but there's 148 tournament wins on the professional beach volleyball, and it's currently the record. and he has Kerry Walsh Jennings nipping right at his heels. And so we'll see how that plays out. That's a really exciting kind of piece of information. But most importantly, he just brings a level of ferocity and fire and competitive spirit, and it's authentic. He's not interested. I want to say he's not interested in beating the other person, but what he's more interested in is progression and making it happen at the highest possible level right now. And there's some amazing gems and nuggets in here about parenting, about how his dad helped him value the process and the performance progression, as opposed to just getting caught in, you know, being the best kid in Santa Barbara, which is one of the meccas for beach volleyball. And at a young age, he was one of the best around, and he didn't care about it. He didn't get caught up in it. He was purposely positioning his efforts towards progression. And so there's some great nuggets in here, and there's a cost. We won't talk about it in this podcast, but hopefully I'll talk about it at a later time. There's a cost to being really good early, and there's a cost to early success for people, is that their identity gets foreclosed on, and they say, I'm an athlete. And then when that takes place, like going out and competing and putting your skills on the line, there's a great fear that can take place with that. We don't get into that here because he talks about the other side, which is, okay, I'm really hungry for getting better. And it's been that way for a long time. And so some of his stats that, you know, he wouldn't want to talk about, but he's won 3 Olympic golds, and he did 2 indoor, and he did 1 on the beach. And that's phenomenal. I mean, 2 different sports, basically. Same skill sets, but the translation between indoor and soft sand is noticeably different. And indoor obviously has many more people on a team, and on the beach it's just you and your partner. So he was able to make that transition, and now he's on to another transition. And that transition is being the head coach for the women's national team. And all the frames that he's seen and experienced as being one of the best athletes, male athletes, in the game. So what he's doing now is on the third transition into coaching. And he's got a really clear approach, and he's translating how to his team, how he's done that. He also wants to make sure that there's a lot of fun taking place in the gym on a regular basis. So it's serious, it's competitive, there's lots of fun, and that there's a deep connection, and that the relationships really matter to him. And then the last is that the way it looks when they play really well is that women's national team volleyball is fast. And so there's fast, there's fun, there's the deep connections, and there's a ferocity about him and the team that he's cultivating. So he's got great talent in the gym. He's got a real clear purpose on how. And in this conversation, he breaks down his path towards mastery, how he understands how progression and mastery works. And then he gets into the particular mindset skills that he values and some of the ways that he's cultivated those over time. So I'm honored to be able to have this conversation. I'm honored to be able to work with the women's national team. And there's something really special about being part of a national team and being able to wear the flag and be part of that purity of performance. So I can't wait to share this with you. Let me stop talking and get right into this great conversation. It was a joy to be part of this with a legendary athlete and coach, Karch Karai.
Here we are, Karch. Yeah, thank you so much for spending the time. We've had the opportunity to spend, I don't know, countless and scores of great conversations over the last three.
I guess we would say 2+, because 2+. We got to first meet early in 2013 and then got to start working together with the team in May of 2013. Here we are in 2.5 years later, calendar-wise, and at the end of our third USA season together. Really exciting stuff going on. Right. And I think about it, and I just, when I said really exciting stuff going on, my whole body lit up with goosebumps.
And those, you know, what I'm looking at is Karch's hair literally standing up. And there's a running joke here in between us and the team that as soon as you say something, you can't hide it when you're excited, because every part of you comes alive.
I fess up to my volley dorkness. I will revel in my volley dorkness. But I don't know, there's something I like There's I'm authentic or sincere when I tell somebody, when I get excited by something that somebody has done, that maybe they're working really hard to get a little better. I can literally get these. I don't try to. I just do. I get excited for something, for a light bulb to go off brighter or for the first time. And that's a big part of all of our staff are amazing with this in terms of trying to bring out the best in each of the people in our program. And if they do that, then most of our work is can be considered a success.
So there's two nuggets in there. The first, so often we have the conversation about excellence happens in the present moment and the importance to train ourselves to be present. And this is a great example of it, is that when you're fully connected to a thought, an idea, an image, an emotion, that full presence for you is realized by, you know, seeing your hair stand up, like in a, and there's a technical name for it, philo or pilo erection.
I knew you'd love that. I'll take it. Yeah. Holy dork pilo erection specialist.
God, that would go down forever. So that's an aliveness that you bring probably to your whole career, your whole life, all of the relationships that you have. And so as this conversation unfolds, hopefully we'll be able to talk about how you prepare to be present so often in life. And obviously being one of the best ever to play the game, there's something we can all learn from this. So if we just began with... how did it start, like this process or path of mastery for you? And if we can quickly snap back to like when you were young, and you know, there's a storied history here. So share as much as you want about, you know, your relationship with your dad's relationship with country, and your unique path, where it begins. And that might be a kind of a first memory, or, you know, not of life, but like first memory of kind of how this path of volleyball excellence has been on for you.
I think a few big things come to mind. First, before I was born, my father grew up in Hungary, and he fell in love with the sport of volleyball there. He played some other things. Everybody plays soccer everywhere in the world except the U.S., although that's growing here too. And so he played on the Hungarian junior national team, and then he was a student at university in 1956 when Radio Free Europe was broadcasting, and he heard reports that Hungary, all people all over Hungary, heard for that they might get their freedom for the first time.
What year was this?
This was in 1956, 11 years after the end of World War II. After World War II, lots of Eastern Europe was taken over behind the Iron Curtain by the Soviet Union, and they were basically a client state, a puppet state of the Soviet Union. So students all across the country got super excited. Every day they would have peaceful demonstrations, 50,000, 100,000, mostly university students assembling in the square with this excitement that they were going to start to get to vote, get some democracy, start choosing their leaders, start determining their own country's outcomes. And then eventually that, and so he would walk through the neighborhood every day, and he could see every block had a Communist Party member who was part of the puppet Soviet regime, who would kind of peek out of the curtains and take numbers and take names and keep track of who was going where, their travel. And so he could see the guy watching him in the window every day on his way to these demonstrations. And so then the Soviets sent in the tanks to crush the revolution, and he knew that he was probably going to be tortured and strung up somewhere if he didn't get out of town. So he had to leave his 5-year-old sister and his parents and make a run to cross the border into Austria. And so he came to this country. So that's the first big part of my story, is he is one of the most proud Americans I could possibly know. Waves the flag with great passion and pride, and loves this country that has taken him in and given him the opportunity to to meet a wife and have a family and become a doctor and have a long and successful career. And then to have a son who got to represent this country at the highest levels playing volleyball, both indoors and sand. So that's the start of that story. And then he began teaching me when I was about 6 years old, because he kept playing. He played some sand volleyball on the beaches in Detroit. We ended up, I grew up for a good part of my early years in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where he went to school, where he met my mom. And so we would play. We would just bop the ball back and forth. When I was 6 years old, we went to Santa Barbara for his internship year of medicine, first year out of medical school. And he and my mom just completely fell in love with Santa Barbara. It's an easy place to fall in love with. And that's where we started bopping the ball back and forth, just kind of peppering. And so that's how I got my start.
So there's lots of ways that parents and mentors and people teach us. And what does your dad represent to you? And the reason I'm asking you this is because he has such a big influence in your life. And, you know, what does he... Maybe not necessarily what did he teach you, but what does he represent to you that he naturally taught you through his day-to-day livings and how he conducted himself?
He is incredibly passionate about his vocation and his avocations, his hobbies.
And that was evidence early about him kind of standing up with the revolution.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So was he noisy in that revolution?
I don't think he was like a big leader who had a bullhorn out there, but he was absolutely, I'm sure, not embarrassed to be out front and center. He would walk right by the Communist Party member and not shrink. He was no shrinking violet.
So go into that, because that's there's something here that really captures my understanding of you too, is being able to stay big, to fight when you need to fight, to be fluid when you need to be fluid. So this, can you talk more about this concept of staying himself and not shrinking?
Absolutely. I mean, for years he started a tradition in Santa Barbara, a couple of traditions. One of them was my dad's name is Laszlo. Everybody calls him Laz for short. There's this thing, I don't even know if it really exists anymore because he doesn't play anymore, but they called it Laz Ball at East Beach in Santa Barbara. And that was, you go down early, you call some buddies, and you get to the court and just play your tail off for 3 hours, like from 7:30 to 10:30 or 11 on a Saturday morning, and you got this amazing workout. You're giving everything you have. You're not playing in a tournament. You're only playing because you love this game. But you would walk down there and you would hear him absolutely before you saw him. He just had these things that he would scream. Because he has an Hungarian accent, having come here when he was 21. But some of the things he would say would be like, rise and think, coach, jump and hit that ball. I mean, he would scream these things. So, and this was just hobby, just for fun,
this
playing lasball.
To
me,
you.
To anybody, whoever part. And when you play lasball, you usually play with each of the other three guys, and you want to be the winner every time. You want to be the champion for that day because you play this kind of round robin King of the Beach format. And people would just be like, who is this guy? And where's he from? And why is he so loud? But he just put everything he had into it for those 3 hours. And there was no trophy on the line. There was just fierce competitiveness, trying to get better, trying to learn new stuff, trying to learn well into playing into his 60s. And then the other thing he brought to East Beach was this concept, because he was a doctor, is they had these nooner courts. And I don't know if they have that anymore, but these nooner courts, basically they designated a bunch of courts. It didn't matter if you were Kerry Walsh or Karch or whoever. If you were on that court, you were booted from when the Nooner Club members who were working guys, worked all day. When they got down there, they got precedence and could kick anybody off from 12 to 1:30. And so for those 90 minutes, most of his patients didn't know that he had trunks on. He had a bathing suit on underneath his suit as a doctor. He'd sprint down there, play for 85 of those 90 minutes,
or
90 minutes, pick the best in the world off the sand, get his 90 minutes in, shower, sprint back to work, because he was madly in love with this game. And in that sense, I I got completely infected by this same love for this game. He has so much passion for it. And I got exposed to a lot of that early. So started when I was six, and then we played in our first tournament together when I was 11. We were a team for the first 4 years I ever played. And so I was the quiet one. I was intense, but really quiet. He did all the talking because of this rise and sing, jump and eat that ball, go, cut, go, go. He'd just be screaming and getting me going. And I was like, okay, cool. This is awesome.
Let's rise and think?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like get up in the air.
He would come up with these weird things that would just, yeah, like jump and think and hit a good shot and put it somewhere. But it wasn't so much... literally, it was just he had these lazisms that people would hear and they would just get a chuckle out of, but they also grew. It would just became a part of East Beach that you would hear Laz before you saw him. And so he was essentially, he was my first coach, my first teammate, and he and I were my first, that was the first team I was ever really a part of in volleyball.
Did that get confusing for you? Or, like, was he always dad? Or was he coach, team? Like, as a young kid, because I know that a lot of caring parents want to be able to bring this level of infectious, to use your word, passion and drive and intensity to something that they find to be really valuable. And then it gets confusing to kids. Like, if you just reflect on that, looking back, did that get confusing ever? Or was it really clear that he's dad? This is how dad is, and he accepts me for whatever. It doesn't mean I have to be great.
To me, it was really clear. My mom remembers it differently. Like, I remember just that my dad was available to play when I wanted to play. She remembers it more that he would drag me out once in a while, but I remember a lot of it that when I was ready to play, whenever I was ready, he was ready, and when I wasn't, he wasn't. So that was a big part of it.
What a great little nugget right there.
Into that. I consider myself really lucky that I grew up and there were no video games at that time. Everything kids did was outside. Classic saw that you'd hear, you'd stay outside until the dinner bell rang and got called in because you didn't want to be out inside. There was nothing fun to do inside. So I consider myself very lucky that there were no video games. I know those would have called to me in my intense nature, and if I'd have gotten into a video game, I would have wanted to do really well at it, and I would have spent more time on things like that and less time on things like that were, I guess, sports related. He also taught me how to play soccer, so I was a pretty good soccer player, played on some teams that he coached. And then also I think I was really lucky to grow up for two reasons in a time when there was no junior, no club volleyball. There were no clubs indoors. Now clubs are everywhere, and club is what every kid grows up playing. And there were no junior age group tournaments in beach volleyball. Why was that good? For one thing, I got a huge advantage because when we first started playing, the first time I ever played on a court, 2-on-2, was when I was 9. My dad said, hey, I think you're about ready. We've been bopping the ball back and forth. Here's a good player. He's a buddy of mine. I play Laz ball with him, but he's better than I am, so I want you to play with him. I'll play with another guy, and we'll just play a pickup game. That was at 9, and then at 11, I read an article in Sports Illustrated about one of the all-time greats of USA, a guy named Larry Rundle, who was a great indoor player and a great sand player, a great beach player. Not too many of those around. As it turns out, I had pretty good careers on both sides of those, too.
Kinda. Yeah, right.
So he had set a record of being the youngest ever to play in an adult tournament. And so at 11 years old, so I thought, that'd be kind of cool to match his record. So we played in a tournament. But the huge advantage I got was I saw adults playing. I didn't see 11-year-olds playing because kids who are 11, they don't really play the game very, they're not very sophisticated. So at 11, I'm seeing the game the way it's supposed to be played when I turn 17 or 22 or 32. Huge advantage that for years and years and years, I got to see it how it's supposed to be played, not how 11 or 12 or 14-year-olds play it.
Okay, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor right here, Hydro. I love what they're doing. They are awesome. I don't know if you're into rowing like I am. I really enjoy it. What I try to do is I try to move around different cardio exercises. Sometimes on a bike, sometimes I'm rowing, sometimes I'm outside. But when I want to row, they've got it dialed in. They've done something fundamentally different than all the other rowers. One, it's not this loud machine that is making a ton of noise and, you know, chains slapping all over the place. They've done this in a really slick, premium, elevated way. And then the other thing they've done is that there's a nice screen that you can have a guide or a coach with you. And their coaches are Olympians and world-class athletes. And what they've done is they're filming, full stop, they are filming all over the world on places where their experts are rowing, and then you get to go with them. And they're coaching you the whole way. I love it. My favorite coach by far is Mac. She's great. And I just want to encourage you to give them a shot. If you love rowing, I think you're going to love this machine. And if you're not into rowing, I don't know if you know this, but rowing, there's been some research around rowing that rowing engages over 80% of your muscles while you're doing it. So it's a really efficient exercise. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydro.com, H-Y-D-R-O-W. .com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com, use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AG1. It's really important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost a decade now, I've been drinking AG1. When I first was connected with them, I thought, oh, this is great. This is great. And then I double-clicked to understand their process and how they went about it. And I just love the rigor that goes into what they're creating and the product that they have. And they've gone through so many iterations to get it just right, 52 of them to be exact. Sometimes quality can be a buzzword, but they are committed. They are fundamentally committed to have a great product for us. They're interested in absorption. They're interested in high quality manufacturing. They rigorously test their product. So I trust what's in AG1. And one of the reasons I have extra confidence in that statement is they are NSF certified for sport. That's one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. They've made it so easy as well. What I do every morning is I take a scoop, put it into a cup of water, shake it up, and it's the first thing that I put in my stomach. And I love it. It just gives me the sense like, okay, I've invested in my health and I haven't even started my day yet. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, I want to encourage you to go check out AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/findingmastery. Again, that's drinkag1.com/findingmastery. I hope you go check them out.
Okay, because one of the things I always think about for development, whether it's best in the world or somebody that's at the recreation level, or somewhere in between, is that there's these bands of performance. And the idea is how quickly can we move up one band, right? And I hope that makes sense. Like at the top, it's a very narrow band because there's very few people there. And at the bottom, it's a wider band. How quickly can we work up into that band? And then how well can we manage the transition through that band? And most people can only move up a couple bands. And then if we're playing, it's kind of like this idea that our social network and our environment are usually one or two standard deviations or above where we are or below possibly. But we can't be around people that are way smarter than us because the conversations don't make sense. And same with performance. But you were around people that were really good, maybe two or three bands above, and somehow you didn't shrink to that. I'm guessing this was your dad's coaching. You were learning that this is a learning process and it's okay to not be the best in the court when you're playing against the people two or three bands above in talent. Is that close?
This was one of the great, I guess, empowering moments for me is when we entered that tournament when I was 11 years old. And I'm playing against grown men in California Beach Volleyball at that time. There were these levels, maybe you could call them bands of expertise.
Like ABC.
And so, and it would be novice, B, A, AA, AAA. If you were a AAA volleyball player, you were some of the best on the planet. And there were some AAA guys who lived and played every day at Santa Barbara. So I would watch and idolize the way they played.
Do you remember any of their names? Or?
Yeah, I would see people like Jim Mangus come to town once a year to play the Santa Barbara Open. His partner Greg Lee, Steve Obradovich, Gary Hooper, Fred Sturm, Andy Fishburne. I'd see all these guys come through town, and it was just awe-inspiring to see. And some guys who played at UC Santa Barbara were gauchos and then would stay in the summer times and play tournaments up and down the coast of California. But anyway, we entered this first tournament, and it was a novice tournament. It's the lowest one. When you win a tournament of a classification, you move up to the next. So you win a novice, you become a B. And I'll never forget it, because these are all grown men, and I'm just this completely skinny punk kid. And I could see, nobody played with sunglasses back then, so it was a cool little thing because I could see the fear in their eyes. Nobody wanted to lose to an 11-year-old kid. And it was incredibly empowering for me. We didn't win either of those games, but they were both really close, and those grown men had to give everything they had to avoid all of their friends just berating them and denigrating them for losing to an 11-year-old kid in a novice tournament. But that was really powerful to me, that at that age I could push. The great power was that it's really hard, it's really difficult to grow from a boy to become a good man, a good husband, and a good father. And on this one level, this was a huge gift to me, that I could stand already at 11, 12 years old, toe-to-toe with men. Doesn't mean I'm a good man, doesn't mean I'm a good husband, doesn't mean I'm a good father, but at least in this one part of becoming a man, already I was able to stand toe-to-toe. It was awesome.
How did you know to look for or interpret what was in their eyes? Was that something Dad helped with? Or is it something you...
No, I think I just picked up on it. It was like... it's the same thing, because volleyball in years past was pickup or challenge or sign-ups. And at East Beach, the A court had one gnarly team after another. So when you were good enough... There was this natural thing. You wanted to be good, because if you lost, you would have to wait 3 hours to get another shot on that court. So the same thing in tournaments. I was trying really hard, and I don't know, something about their demeanor, their body language. If I were a grown man, I probably wouldn't want to lose to an 11-year-old kid either.
Of course, but this is something really, I think, special, is that you were not consumed with how you looked or the result you were going to take, or I don't want to look bad, I don't want to let down Dad. You were so present that you were seeing what was happening in others and filtering that in a way like, oh, look, okay, so they're concerned. Let me take advantage. I got space now. Let me go. And what do you remember some of that inner dialogue?
I was quite good at a very young age, so that stood out to people. And I don't know if it was just playing with my dad, and no, you know, if I didn't give effort, he'd be like, come on, Karcher. You know, it was never, oh, you're so good at such a young age that you should be happy with where you are. It was about getting better. It was about trying to give more effort, give better mastery, but not in a really demanding way. It was just like, he'd be disappointed if I slacked on a play, or I'd be disappointed in him if he slacked on a play, as I learned from him. So I for some reason, I'm really lucky. I never got caught up in this thing of people watching me and what are they thinking. It was always about, God, this is so cool to be on the court with this guy. And then I'd play with my friends, and we got up the nerve when I was around 15 or so to challenge these AAA guys, these guys who were winning Opens. They were the best beach volleyball, some of the best in the world. And we'd lose 15-4, and we'd think, that's pretty cool. We can't wait to get up. First of all, it took us a lot of nerve to eventually challenge, and then we'd get our butts kicked. But we'd lose 15-4, and then the next time it was like 15-7, and then all of a sudden, now we're competing with them, and there was, again, this power of, like, these guys are, well, these are just local kids. How? Why are we having so worked so hard to beat them at 15, yeah. 16 years old?
And what at home, what percentage, and this is me, like, actually curious now, but what was the percentage of conversations about winning versus progression and getting better and high effort? And this is easy, like process versus outcome focus from your dad.
It wasn't that much about volleyball when we were off the court, in my recollection. It certainly wasn't about, oh, we didn't win this tournament, we have to win this tournament. It wasn't about winning. It was just about deriving joy from this thing that we both found that we loved. And this was kind of, it started as dad and son time, because when you're an intern in medicine, you're working close to at least 80, maybe 100-hour weeks. So our only time was on weekends. I wouldn't really see him during the week, but then we'd get to bop the ball around a little. And then as I got a little older, that was our time. On weekends, we would drive as far south as Ocean Beach in San Diego, all the way up and down the coast. We would drive down early on a Saturday morning and couldn't get enough. We'd go to Marina Del Rey. That was the big tournament we'd play at a lot.
Right.
128 teams in a novice tournament. I couldn't get enough of volleyball. We'd stay overnight at a local motel, play all day Sunday, drive back Sunday night, and that was my time with him on the weekend. And then he'd work really hard during the week, and I'd be doing my school thing. But outside of volleyball, I don't think there was very little about winning and losing, and more just about, hey, maybe how do we get a little bit better for next weekend when we play the next tournament?
Love it. And then so this is like the part of your relationship with your dad and the process, and you being one of the best, if not the best, hands down, the best, you know, multiple awards, multiple gold medals in multiple sports, indoor and out and beach. What is there a cost to investing deeply in mastery? Is there part of this that you've experienced that says, okay, it's great to be one of the best. And there's also another side to this that has been a real challenge. And, you know, I'm thinking about people that are listening that have this glossy aspirational view of it, and it might not be so clean, you know, and I'm wondering if there's anything that comes to mind for you.
I think there is a cost at times. It just is, I guess I have to, when I'm pursuing mastery, I can get so engrossed in it that it's to the detriment or to the cost of making sure I have enough focus on other things that are important, really important in my life, my wife, our kids, things like that. So my wife, Jana, has been great about just kind of gently steering me back when I get particularly involved in the vortex of trying to, I don't know, help this team be a little better. You can take that to the nth degree and work on it 24 hours a day, but then ultimately that other cost is that you, that I'm not taking enough time for myself outside of volleyball with family, with friends, to recharge and have the energy I need to be good at anything that I'm doing. So certainly that can be all-encompassing at times. That's the side that can be a challenge, because it's something I really love to do. It's not an illegal activity. It's a perfectly legal and wonderful activity, but too much of anything is too much of anything.
Yeah, I'm on this conversation, on this side of the conversation, having some relief. And because I struggle with the same exact thing, and people ask me about balance all the time, I don't have it in my life. And most of the people that I'm spending time with would say, yeah, I don't think I have balance as well. But the search is not for balance. It's for being deeply connected to whatever it is that we're doing at the time. So being a great dad, a great husband, a great coach, and a great player when you're with it, when you're actually playing. Okay, so
one of the things that helped with that certainly was the fact that my wife and I homeschooled our boys for 5 years, and that was a time I would never give up, just precious, precious time to be able to spend with them. And it worked well because my summers with sand volleyball, I still could be around during the week, but I would be gone every weekend. And so my summers were the busiest time, and a normal school kid, the summers are the off time. So it was a great way to kind of balance some of that out, that when I was most busy, they were least busy and most available to me, and I couldn't always be available for that.
Yeah, so creating a structure for that deep connection and time. Okay, is there a phrase that guides your life? Whatever might come to mind.
I don't know if there is one, but you could certainly... We've had a lot of work with our team in terms of what do I stand for. And so one thing I could easily stand for is just relentless pursuit of good or of better. Not of perfection and not of great, but some really good things will happen if you relentlessly pursue better.
Yeah, your whole life has been invested in progression and growth, and taking lessons from today and moving forward with you for the next opportunity, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a word that would cut to the center of what you understand most in life? It's a tough question.
Well, one of my buddies, a great friend of mine off the USA team when we played together, one of our famous guys, Steve Timmons, who was big and recognizable and charismatic and just loved having him as a teammate, big guy with a red flat top. Some people remember him with that unique haircut, but he would just say, "Coach, you can't do anything halfway. You do everything as hard as you possibly can." So I don't know. It's something to do with effort or excellence, I guess, would be too, because it is really hard for me to do anything half-ass, halfway. That just feels like a total waste of time for me.
And following this thread, is there a word that describes who you are the best?
I don't know that there is, because I want to be a good man, a good American, a good husband, a good father, a good teammate, a good coach, and somebody who's trying to find and bring out the best in people around them. I don't know if there's a word that fits for that.
Yeah, I don't know if there is either, but is the... Maybe in another language, it's like the French are a little more precise than we are in language. But is there, what are you hungry for? Like, what are you hunting or hungry for in life?
Right now, at least inside of volleyball, I'm hungry in this constant pursuit that this team, this USA women's team has, to reach higher levels of mastery, to get better, and to help the team get to places it's never been before.
Yeah.
And that's really fun and challenging, and it can be utterly engrossing, addictive, and so that's where I have to find some happy mediums too.
Yeah, it's on this side of the, or not this side, but being part of what you're creating and developing, the consistency of your approach towards progression and effort and rise and think, you know, and this real deep interest in how do we get better today is created so much space for athletes to be able to trust and let go and figure it out as they go, and instead of this need to be perfect. And from my lenses, it's a gift that you've given every member of this team for them to be able to know that they're working on being their best, and that's it. It's not perfect. It's just being their best. It's created so much space for people. And I wonder if you've noticed it in the time you've been able to help dictate or guide some of the ethos and culture.
I have. I just think there is some comfort when it's acknowledged that a player gets here and there, and she's acknowledged that you are not fully formed when you get here. Hopefully, you're never fully formed. Hopefully, you're always growing. Hopefully, I'm never fully formed. Hopefully, I'm getting better. That's my great hope and aspiration. But I think it's a lot better to be in a place of becoming, of constant becoming, than of being and stuck and static.
And yeah, there it is again, the process of growth. And in that, it invites this relationship to risk-taking. And do you have a particular moment in time that captures your relationship with risk-taking? Is there a specific moment where you say, this is when I figured some stuff out about risk-taking? Because you do let it rip.
I remember the first meeting that we had with you and this team at the end.
Risk-taking.
No, it wasn't risk-taking at all. It was what you talked about. You mentioned, you helped me remember just because you said let it rip. At the end of that first meeting, you asked people, what's more fun? Is it to play it safe or is it to let it rip? And not a single hand went up that said it's fun to play it safe. So we let it rip. And a few weeks before that, and the first meeting we had with me as head coach and the athletes, the players we had around at that time, maybe I took a little bit of a risk, but I thought it made a lot of sense. I just said, the first thing I said was, look, none of us are good enough yet. That huge word, yet. And it starts with me. I'm not good enough yet. And that's okay. I coached the last 4 years. We tried to do something from 2009 to 2012 in London to help the team get to somewhere it's never been before, to stand at the top of a podium at a major international event. And we got awfully close. We got a couple of silver medals. Lots to be proud of. But I wasn't good enough for those 4 years. And so I thought taking a small risk to fess up, I guess, or take on the responsibility of not being good enough would be freeing to everybody around and that it's okay to not be good enough,
right,
and we're going to get better.
And to reveal that this is part of growth,
yeah,
is like saying, okay, there's more to go. I'm not perfect. It hasn't been good enough yet. I'm hunting for it. I'm hungry for it. And let's do this together. And it just invited everybody into this process, because you know you are clearly the best to be able to do on as an athlete what you're doing, and you're saying, hey, I'm in a learning frame right now from what I've learned and done at the highest level as a coach.
And the other thing is, if we're not making mistakes, we're not pushing the envelope enough.
That's
we
the
have to be
piece.
Operating at the edge of our ability level. So I kind of front-loaded it. I said, look, if I'm never making mistakes, I'm not pushing hard enough. So I'm going to be making some mistakes here. I'm not always going to be perfect for you guys. I'm going to screw up. We'll have a laugh about it, but it'll be part of this experience. And so hopefully you guys are okay making mistakes too, because I know I'm going to make some. I've never been a head coach anywhere before. I'm going to be learning a lot. But I need to be making mistakes, or I'm not learning fast enough either. So hopefully that freed them up. About this concept of risk and making mistakes,
and
too.
And it probably freed you up, too, to say it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Finding Master is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. By now, you're probably well aware that I am a huge fan of what they're doing. I love what they're building and how they're using science-backed technology to help people flourish. This is just a great technology that isn't measuring something. It's actually providing a state change for you, to help you either downregulate, find a deeper sense of calm, maybe fall asleep a little bit easier. And if you want to be a bit more up and animated, they've got a way to help you do that as well. It's awesome. It works by sending silent, soothing vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, of course. That's fun. And it's like music that you can just feel.
Just like music, higher vibrations help improve your energy and focus, while lower vibrations, slower vibrations, help to reduce stress, help you relax. I use it twice a day. I use it after I do something really intense. So after it's a lift, after some fitness, after some sport, or after something I'm doing in the office. And I use it right before I go to bed. The science that they found is fascinating. Across various real world and clinical trials, Apollo wearable users experience up to 40% less stress and feelings of anxiety. That's an average, of course. 19% more time in deep sleep, 11% increase in HRV, heart rate variability, and up to 25% more focus and concentration. Those are radical. And because you're a part of the Finding Mastery community, you're going to get an exclusive, and I mean that word here, 15% off an Apollo wearable. So just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code FINDINGMASTERY at checkout. This is an exclusive offer only available to Finding Mastery. I love that we get to do this together. So be sure to use our code. Again, APOLLONEURO, apolloneuro.com/findingmastery, or use the code FINDINGMASTERY at checkout for 15% off your purchase. You're only getting that here. I really hope you'll check them out. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTrue. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being, but it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTrue. Their purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. So just go to AquaTrue.com. You spell it AquaTru.com and enter the code FINDINGMASTERY at checkout. Again, that's AquaTrue.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there. And then, so this is, for me, if we can snap into inner dialogue, the inner critic, that little voice that can maybe keep us small or keep us safe, and which is maybe not even close to what we really want to do in our talent. What is your inner critic like, or how do you deal with that inner voice, that self-doubt, or the nonsense that gets in the way? Like, what is it that you do to be able to be great at that?
I think first of all, I've made a wise choice not to follow a lot of the, social media stuff, a lot of the literally there are lots of voices out there. And if I wanted to follow those closely, I'm sure I could find out lots of ways I screwed up. But it's not about all the mistakes I'm making. Is it, can I be better? And can I help people be better? So first of all, it's shutting off literally that noise out there and not paying attention to it. I learned that in Italy, playing professionally over there. The papers would just kind of write anything, say anything, make up quotes about you, and I just learned not to pay attention to that stuff anymore. And I grew up, for some reason, playing with my dad and just never got caught up in the thing of, oh, have you seen that 15-year-old kid and what he's doing? It wasn't about me and what I was doing at 15 is like, hey, I want to beat that guy right now. I got to figure out how to get that shot up. He's got this really good shot. What's my answer to that? So that next time we play, I'm going to make his life a little tougher there and not get caught up with the people who are watching and talking and not doing.
Do you think your framework of pursuing mastery, of growth, of being able to value progression, at the same time being open and honest about where you are and your hunger for it, that that has decreased the volume of inner critic, as well as not paying attention to what other people are thinking about you?
I think having a growth mindset like that does help significantly decrease the volume.
So you're not battling as hard in yourself as somebody who's got lots of doubt, needs to be perfect.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think it's really freeing.
Yeah.
It's freeing, hopefully, to all of the players, all of the people who play in this program, and to all of the staff in this program, that we're all okay with screwing up sometimes and learning from it, that we need to be operating at the edge.
Love it, because there's two ways that I always think about the inner game. There's the psychological framework, which is what you and I have been talking about so far, and then there's mental skills. And if you've got this really robust framework about, hey, I'm going to make mistakes, but I'm going to get over them quickly, and I'm going to be better for them, and I'm really good as well, so let's package that up and go, we don't need to do as much mental skill work. But mental skill still has an advantage. So can you kind of walk us through when people watch when people watch you, what is your ideal competitive mindset?
I always love to, I guess there were three things that were big for me as I competed as a player. Number one, how do I make people around me better? Because I found that really freeing, because if I can help one person next to me or five people on the court with me play their best, then it doesn't really matter what I do if I can find all these ways. Sometimes I can be having kind of a lousy game, but if I can still help people play near at or near their best around me, then there's such power in that. And in a sense, that was freeing, because it took away some of my putting pressure on myself to play well. So that was one, is elevating the play of those around me. Number two was just being as well prepared as I possibly could be, knowing there's this amazing sense of calm and of poise that comes with, look, I did everything I could to be ready, so now we'll just let the game take care of itself. And I did have a really strong ability to play one play as hard as I possibly could with a really high level of focus. And then I could back off from that, and I could do that over and over again for hundreds and hundreds of plays in a given day. And it took me a while to develop that. My dad, certainly, with his focus and his passion, was a good model for that. But that ability to just play in these discrete segments, because if you look at this tournament we have coming up, we've got 11 matches. Where we're trying to qualify for the Olympics. And if you look at it in its sum, it's really intimidating. But if we just think about that first play and give it everything we have, and then the next play, and then the next play, and we string together lots of good in these points, then it's not intimidating at all. It's just giving everything you have for 10 seconds.
Oh, brilliant. And was there anything you did to be able to increase your ability to focus discreetly in this on-off mechanism? Or was it built into just how you
train? We would build practices to do that, for sure. We had challenging practices with the USA, with the men's team. We had challenging... I adapted those drills or those activities to... use on the sand when I was retired from the USA team, and we'd have these challenging things. I'll never forget this. We had this thing where, you know, how many in a row we could do, or so we would do in a row activities, or how many out of how many And one day my partner got injured as we were at a training session, so he sat down, and I just said, okay, I'll do it myself, just to challenge myself. And so the it was just a simple thing. Serve comes my way.
I'll take it. Go ahead, take a break. I'll take it.
I got somebody to set for me, but it was like usually the serve would come to me, and then it might come to him, and we had to see how many out of 24 we could win. And so I actually, I'm still mad that I didn't get the 24th, but I got 23 in a row where the serve came to me. The replacement partner set me, and I needed to put it away, and I put it away. 23, it was the highest we ever scored out of 24. A really good score was like 20. I got the 23. I didn't get the 24th down. But 23 times I played a discrete play, and a 24th time too, and that was really challenging, because now physically you get really tired, and can you keep that level of dialed in-ness or that level of engagement? We talk about engagement here.
I think that that's one of the gifts of high-level performance, or let me strike that. It's one of the gifts of sport, is to figure out your mind with your body breaking down and exhausted. Like, that's different than a normal meditative or mindfulness practice, right? About deep awareness. We're pursuing that when our body is exhausted. And it's a great way to figure some stuff out about who you are.
I loved operating in that state. I didn't get to do it enough. I loved the challenge of being so tired, so drained, that it's really hard to think straight, and to operate and see if you can get back to thinking straight. That was awesome to me, when you're on the verge of exhaustion or on the verge of, there was one time playing at a tournament in Rio, it was 114 degrees and 99% humidity. And so we just got into this, a guy across the net and I, who I knew had a ton of willpower, I just, in my own mind, and I know he knew what was going on, but I just said, I'm going to make this a contest to see who has to call a timeout first. And I've never had my heart beating so hard. I wouldn't have been surprised if I had a heart attack at that point, even though I'm 22. Oh, 22 don't have, 25-year-olds don't have heart attacks, who are in great shape, but I just made it a contest, and it was, I was gasping for air and gasping for oxygen, but at some point, about 25 minutes into the event, he called the first timeout, and I knew at that point we had the match, because I had just decided I'm not gonna back down, and I don't care if I'm getting dizzy at times, and part of me wants to call that timeout. I will not be calling that timeout.
Unbelievable. I mean, like, we're both grinning right now. Like, that is rad. Okay, so I'm mindful of your time. I want to get to just a few more little nuggets here. Thank you so far for all the time. Out of all of these mental skills, which one would you say is, you know, which ones are the most valuable to you? Generating calm, generating confidence, having a deep focus, doing mental imagery, or having some sort of routine to get ready?
I have a lot of calm. I think that is helpful as a teammate and as a coach. I want to infect this team with calm and with poise. What was second?
Like, generating confidence.
I've been able to have some real success, even at times when confidence wasn't at its top. So I think for me, focus was one that was really big, to have a level of focus that allowed me to never be really surprised on the court. And when people would try to surprise me is when that would cost them.
Because they're doing something they don't normally do.
And so that turned into a real advantage, the focus thing. And then I also had not so much pre-performance routines, or maybe I had routines that I would use in getting ready for the next play, but not so much earlier that day, although I did have a routine that I really liked in terms of stretching and balancing and some dynamic movements that I liked as part of my warm-up each time, and I found that really centering and calming and focusing.
To switch your body on?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you... Okay. So if you just kind of... Like, if we just did some quick hits and just see, like, quick little responses to these. Without any judgment, what comes to mind when I say pressure comes from?
From my own mind. So I got to work on my mind and then I'll lower it.
I love it. It comes down, it all comes down to.
Being, having a plan and being engaged in that plan for the next play for 10 seconds.
The crossroad was.
I think the only time I ran into kind of a fork in the road or this thing of, whoa, I really don't know what's going to happen next was after my first shoulder surgery. It was really tough coming back. Had some terrible results. It was different architecture in the shoulder, taking a swing and the ball would go 5 feet different from where it had gone for 30 years. And I just eventually had to have a meeting with myself, like, I don't know if I'm ever going to get back to the state that I was able to play at this certain high level, this certain consistent level. Am I okay with that? And I decided after a couple hours in this self-dialogue that I was okay with that. And then I ended up playing another 10 years. But I was thinking at that instant, this could well be my last season, so I'll just let up a little and just ride it and see what happens. And it turned out not to be my last season, but my 11th to last season.
Wow. And is that what you would do, have a meeting with yourself? Is that how you do like an introspective?
I did at that time because yeah. It was just so frustrating to not be able to do what I had done for a long time on the court.
Success is
making people around you better.
Love.
My wife, Jana, and our kids, Corey and Christian.
Flow.
There's something incredibly freeing and liberating to prepare for that next point. Be engaged in it and then just let it happen. That's flow to me.
My vision
is for this program to constantly pursue mastery and to give each player, each person in this program, every tool she can have to pursue the best her she can be.
Wow. Okay. Last little gem here, and then I've got one question. We'll wrap it. I am.
I'm trying to be a good man, good husband, good father, good son, good American, good coach.
That's beautiful. Yeah. In that order.
The order can vary depending on, I don't know, when I'm here at work, it's about being a good man and a good coach.
Yeah. Okay.
And less about being a good husband and a good father.
Yeah. Because you're all in.
Yeah.
Wherever you are, you're all into it. Okay. In your words, how do you define or articulate mastery? And then the follow on to that is there any one habit that is most important? And this is definitely the last question.
I guess I think of it as a never-ending process. I don't think there's this point at which you become a master. It's a lot like if you're in a martial art and you get your second degree black belt, well, of course you then start pursuing your third. It just never ends. It's this constant pursuit of better than whatever you are, there's something about being that, but something really exciting about what else you can become beyond that.
Beautiful. Okay, Karch, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming in and sharing this, all the wisdom and insight. And where can we find more about the club and what you're up to and
Well, certainly you can learn about a lot about the USA women's indoor volleyball team at usavolleyball.org, and you can find them on Twitter, of course, at USA Volleyball, and I'm on Twitter somewhere. I don't. you just put Karchin, you'll find that too. So anyway, thank you, Mike, for all of you that all you've meant to this program for the. Getting on the end of our third season now, and some exciting stuff we've been through, and a lot more exciting and challenging and exciting because it's challenging stuff to come.
It's been a gift, and this has been a great ride, and progression is what we're both hungry for, and yeah. I can't wait to see where this takes us.
Awesome.
Thanks, Karch. Thanks. If you enjoyed this conversation, and there's a couple things I hope you might be able to do, you go to iTunes and subscribe to Finding Mastery. And if you are so inclined to press the like button, it really helps us out as we're trying to create some momentum here. And you can also go to our website, findingmastery.net. You can follow us on Twitter at Michael Gervais, my name, MichaelGervais. And then on Facebook as well. So facebook.com/ I think it's a /, or maybe it's a /. I don't know nowadays, but / Finding Mastery. And you can also, you know, connect to Karch's work on social media and Twitter, as he described. And it's K-A-R-C-H. And yeah, what a gift. Thank you so much. Hopefully we'll have lots of this loaded up on show notes and all the good stuff that you can find on findingmastery.net. And until we're able to connect again, just a deep gratitude and thank you for listening. I'm hopeful to hear how, you know, you're vibing with this, and send some social media tweets our way, and keep us honest and keep us connected. And I'm thinking about spending some time on some podcast to decode, like after the close of the conversation, to decode what I've heard. And what I don't want, though, is too much of my voice in these things. So if you're interested in that, can you hit me up on Twitter at Michael Gervais and just say yes. Share the decode with us, and I'll spend an extra maybe, I don't know, 7-10 minutes on ways that I think we can maybe train mastery, or that we can the way that I've understood what he or she has spoken about. So again, deeply gratitude for all of this, and deeply grateful for Karch for spending time and sharing his path towards mastery. Okay, all the best, everyone. Take care. All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest, no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well. Think well and keep exploring.